Greetings. On behalf of the St. John's United Methodist Church family, I want you to get ready to have life spoken into you. These messages that you're going to hear by audio or video are carefully crafted that they might feed your faith and starve your doubts. We pray that God will make you stronger and will prepare you for the destiny that He's called you to live into, not only in the week to come, but in the rest of your life through how God speaks to us through His text and through these servants. We treat it with precious honor that we are gifted and given the opportunity to feed your faith. And so now, get ready, receive, and know that God has a word for you.
If we would all please stand for the reading of the scripture. Today's scripture comes from Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. I'm reading from the New International Version. Zacchaeus, the tax collector. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He is gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house, because this man, too, is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
The story that I want to share with you this morning is very biblical, but you won't find it the way I'm going to present it in the Bible. I want you to use your imagination this morning. It's a gift that God has given us. When I was a student in Carbondale, we went to the Wesley Foundation. We're part of the Wesley Weds. But there was a Baptist Foundation on the campus as well, and they taught classes. And anybody who minored in religion could take classes there. And the scuttlebutt around the campus was that you could get a pretty decent grade without working too hard. So naturally, I decided to sign up for some of those. And I'm glad I did. But one of the things, they had a library over at the Baptist Foundation. So did the Wesley Foundation as well. But one morning, one of my colleagues, we used to meet in the mornings before classes in one of the old barracks that was called a student union in those days. And they had barracks strung all over the campus. That was a lot of the classes and a lot of activities took place in those old barracks building that came back after the war. And one of my colleagues, who was a student pastor, came in to coffee that morning waving a little paperback book. And he said, "Fellas, this will preach. You need to read it." And it was a book by a guy by the name of G. Campbell, a Southern Illinois minister. I don't know what his denomination was. It didn't say and didn't give any information about the author. But one of the messages in that book was entitled "The Spirit of Christ." And he sort of used this message that I'm going to try to share with you this morning, because the story of Zacchaeus is very intriguing. A wealthy man to begin with. And when Rome took over and began to dominate the region, they started imposing taxes on the people. And the main thing they were doing was building roads in the region. And later, this proved to be one of the best reasons why the gospel began to spread, because Rome built so many good roads all through the Mediterranean area, and especially in the Middle East that it controlled. And as a result of that, travel became much easier. But Zacchaeus, being a wealthy man to begin with, was ordered by the Romans to work for them. And he became one of the lead tax collectors and was given a region to cover. And he had to find employees to work under him to go out and do the dirty work. And when Rome put the pressure on and said, we need more money, we're running out, we're short, and partly because the big headshot guy was building places for his winter stay and his summer stay and all the other benefits, having parties and using a lot of that money in ways other than building roads. And so Zacchaeus called special meeting one morning to all of his employees and said, ladies and gentlemen, the pressure is on. Rome wants more money. And they all started complaining, these people don't have any more money. We've already gotten all we can get from them. It's useless to try for more. And he said, well, you're going to have to do it anyway. And so one brazen young man in the group said, well, Zacchaeus, if you think it can be done, why don't you show us how to do it? Why don't you go out and show us how to make these people pay more money when they don't have it? And so, being the egotistical guy that he was, he very quickly accepted that challenge without realizing what he was getting himself into. And so the next Monday, he decided to do this. He accepted one of the regions, and he went out to collect taxes. And I think that what he experienced during this time, and if it didn't happen this way, we've got to know that something happened in his life to cause him to have the interest that he had in this stranger. Now remember, they didn't have telegraph, telephone, or telewoman back in those days, because women didn't amount to anything in those days, and so nobody trusted anything they said anyway. So that was one of the handicaps they had during that period of time, not recognizing the value of women and the good that they could offer to society. You know, the same thing happened in the churches. There was a period of time in history where the men practically just turned their back on the church. If it hadn't been for the women and their nickels and dimes that they contributed and all the work they did, the church wouldn't have survived those years. And so as a church, we need to look back in history and thank God for the women in the church and their dedication, their loyalty, and their love for Christ and the work that they put forth to make the church what it is today. Well, Zacchaeus started on his route. And remember, you won't find this in the Bible the way it is, but every story I'm going to share with you is true biblically. Zacchaeus picked a street, went up and knocked on the door. A woman answered, and when she realized what was going on, she said, well, Zacchaeus, our daughter is possessed by a demon, and we've had more trouble in the last few months than we've ever had in all of our lives. It's occupied all of our time. And she's very ill. We're not sure how much longer she'll be with us. And we haven't had a chance to work or do the things that we need to do to raise money. And we simply don't have any money that we can share at this time. And Zacchaeus told her it was necessary and he would be back the next week and she better have it when he came back. And he went on. He went to the next house and knocked on the door, and another lady came to the door, but she recognized Zacchaeus. Remember, he was already a wealthy man before Rome took over, and he evidently was well respected by a lot of the people in the community. And she said, Zacchaeus, my husband is paralytic, and he hasn't been able to do anything, but he knows you, and it would mean so much to him if you'd just step in and say hello to him, because he doesn't get many visitors, nobody stops by to see him, and it would mean so much to him. Well, I don't have time for anything like that. I came to collect the taxes that have been ordered by Rome, and I want them. She said, well, I'm sorry, we don't have it. And he said, I'll have to wait then and come back next week. She said, oh, Zacchaeus, before you leave, come on in and say hello to him. So reluctantly, he goes in and speaks to him, shakes his hand, and says a few pleasantries, and then leaves. He goes on a little farther. In the next house he comes to, he notices a bell on the gate, and he knows what that means. And so he begins to yell, and he saw some children playing in the back, and he got their attention, and they came around. And he said, "Are your parents here?" "Well, my mother is here." He said, "Come, tell her to come out. I want to talk to her." And he introduced himself, why he was there and everything. She said, "Well, you know my husband is a leper, and he is traveling with other lepers because that's the only people he can have any contact with. And he hasn't been able to raise any money. I'm sorry, but we just don't have it." And again, he tries to give his little spiel, but to no advantage. And he says he'll be back the next week. Goes on to another house, and he notices a wreath on the door. And he goes ahead and knocks on the door anyway. Well, the lady of the house comes. Turns out she's a widow, and her only son, that was her main help and helped her survive, had died. And that was the reason for the wreath. She didn't have any money and was very apologetic for it. And he said, "Well, I'll be back next week and try to have that money if you possibly can." Then he goes on to the next house. And here, another woman answers the door. He introduces himself, goes through the spiel, and she says, "Well, I'm sorry, but my husband is blind, and he has a place over by the city gate that he goes every day and sits and waits for somebody to come by and make a contribution. And the last few weeks, the contributions have been very thin. We can't survive with what he's been receiving, and I'm so sorry." But Zacchaeus is beginning to weaken a little bit, and he says, "Well, I'll be back next week, and if you can come up with any of it, do so." Well, he goes back to the office, and everybody's waiting on him. "And how'd you do, Zacchaeus?" He doesn't answer. He just goes to his office, slams the door, and sits down, and sort of hangs his head. And then the week goes by, and he really dreads that week coming up. But he wants to show his other employees how it's done. And so he goes out on that next Monday morning with the expectation that he'll be able to bring in some money. When he goes to that first home that he had been to, a young girl answers the door. And he said, "Well, who are you?" And she said, "Well, I'm the daughter." "Well, where's your mother?" And so she comes to the door, and first thing he said, without giving her a chance, "You lied to me last week." "No, I didn't. You told me your daughter was possessed of a demon and near death. And here she is. She looks as beautiful and as young and healthy as anybody can be. What's going on here?" And so she tells the story that she did die, and they were carrying her body to the cemetery. And this stranger was passing through, and he stops them, and he speaks to the girl and tells her to come forth, touches his hand, her body with his hand, and said she was healed. The demons were driven out, and she was brought back to us, pure, clean, and fully healthy. And she said, "And by the way, we do have the money that we owe." And she handed him the money. Well, he sort of shook his head and thanked her and went on. And this was the man that he had to go in and speak to reluctantly. And when he goes to the door, she calls her husband out to talk to Zacchaeus. And he said, what's going on here? Thought you were paralyzed." "I was." And said, "A stranger was coming through and some people came to get me and take me over to him. But when we got there, there was such a crowd, we couldn't get into the building where he was. And so some men got up and cut a hole through the roof. They lifted me up and lowered me down through the roof right in front of Jesus. And he looked at me and said, 'Pick up your bedding and go.' And he said, all of a sudden, I had power in my hands and my arms. I don't understand it, but it was a miracle. And I was able to walk away from there carrying my own bedding." And Zacchaeus asked a few questions about it to see if he was telling the truth, and it seemed that he was. They didn't have all the money, but they had some of it and gave it to him. Well, he is really beginning to wonder what all this is about. He goes to the next home where the bell is on the gate, and again he hollers and tries to get somebody to come out. And he looks up, and here comes the man out of the house, and he starts backing away. Stay over there. I don't want to get close to you. And he said, Zacchaeus, and he held out his hands. He said, I'm healed. He said, what do you mean? He said, well, I was traveling with a group of my fellow colleagues, and as usual, when somebody was approaching on the same trail, we would ring our bells and get off to the side to let them pass. But said there was one gentleman in this crowd that didn't seem to bother, and he came right up to us and began to talk to us and told us to go down and show ourselves to the priest, but before we did, to go bathe in the pool and then go to the priest and show ourselves to them. And he said, your lives will be changed if you'll do that. And so we thought it was kind of crazy, but we did. And when we got to the priest, we discovered that all of our scars were gone and all of us were clean. And he said, I went back and ran and caught up with him and knelt down before him and thanked him for what he had done for us. And he said, well, weren't there 10 of you? I said, yes. Where are the other 9? He looked around and they weren't with him. He said, I don't know. And so he told him to go on to his home and family and to celebrate the victory that has come to him through Jesus Christ. And he did. His wife was amazed. And again, they had a little bit of money, a sort of a pittance, and they gave it to him. Well, he goes on, and this is where the wreath was. And he was already beginning to change his mind. And he thought, well, I think I'll help this widow woman out when she comes to the door. But when she came to the, when he knocked on the door, the son answered the door. And he looked at him and said, what's going on? Your mother told me you were dead. And he said, I was. But again, as they were carrying me to the burial spot, this stranger came up and stopped them and asked him to come forth from the beyond. And he said, all of a sudden, I felt new life and strength coming into my body. And I was able to rise up out of the bedding that they had me on. And I'm in full strength now. He brought me back to life. And so when the widow came forward, he began to tell her about all the strange things he was witnessing that day. And he said, I want to make a contribution to you for your son and help you out. Oh, you don't need to do that. He said, I want to. I want to. You accept it. And so he did. And he went on to the next place, and this is where the wife he had sat down and talked to, and when she saw him, she welcomed him, and she said, come on in, and let's have a cup of coffee. And so he did. And he said, this has been a strange day, and I don't know how to explain it, but things have really been happening in people's lives. And he began to share some of the things with her. And while he was talking, she got up and went to the door and looked out the door, and he said, what's wrong? She said, well, I thought that was my husband coming, but it's not him. He doesn't have his cane. And so she stood there for a moment as Jesus, or as Zacchaeus went on. And finally, when the man got a little closer, she opened the door and ran out and grabbed him and said, what's going on here? And he said, this stranger came through and he saw me. He said, that's another story. That was Peter's story. But he said, this man reached down and took some dust, spit in it and made a paste and rubbed it on my eyes and said, go and wash now. And when I did, I was able to see. And he said, I threw my cane away. I've been able to walk home. And I wasn't quite sure if I was going the right direction or not because I didn't have my stick to get the sounds and things that I normally get. But I was able to make it back home. And he went in and talked to Zacchaeus, shared all that story with him. And again, Zacchaeus said, well, I don't want any money. You you go ahead and if whatever you collect, keep it and prepare for yourselves. And he went back to the office, and of course everybody's waiting. He wouldn't talk to any of them. But before he left there that day, I got ahead of myself. He started asking the man how this all happened, and when he told him, he said, well, who was this man? He said, they called him Jesus. He said, well, where is he now? Well, he was passing through. He's probably about a half a mile over there. And Zacchaeus takes off running. He wants to go see this man because word of mouth was such that when they get news, they all wanted to hear about it. When Truman was coming through southern Illinois, everybody wanted to see him. They let Chittyville School out, and he was supposed to come through Freeman from West Frankfort, through Freeman Spur, through Chittyville, and then to Heron. And while we were standing out there, a state patrolman came by and said, they changed their mind. They're not coming through here. They're going through Johnson City. I guess they found out there were more people in Johnson City than there were in Freeman Spur and Chittyville, and so they changed their mind. Well, we were all disappointed. But some of the teachers got together and got some cars, and they took the top four grades, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, into town. And when we got there, I've never seen a mob like there was that day. People were on the roofs of the buildings. There was a doughboy right in the middle of the street in the where people would come and make U-turns and go around it. And also, when Shirley and I were married, they came and captured us. And they made me push her down the street in a wheelbarrow to the doughboy. Then they put her up on the doughboy, and all the men came by kissing her. And then they later took us to Crab Orchard Lake and threw us in. But anyway, in Heron, I've never seen a crowd like that before or since. I couldn't believe it. Some buses pulled up. I thought, well, maybe that's the president. But it wasn't. It was about 30 men. Got out, had guns and everything, and started spreading out through the crowd. And then another one came up, and some more people got out. And finally, another big car came up and pulled right up to the doughboy where they had the platform rigged, and President Truman stepped out and gave a speech. I couldn't tell you a word he said, but it was the first president that I ever saw, and the excitement of the people of seeing this president who would come through southern Illinois and stop in Heron, Illinois, and the other places. He started out up north on a train and came down to West Frankfort by train and then was on buses and automobiles. And so I can imagine the kind of crowd that was there that day when Zacchaeus got closer and he started looking around. He saw this big sycamore tree up ahead, and he ran and climbed up the tree. And you know the story. Now, that little song we sang about the wee little man, that's a beautiful little song for the children to sing. But this was not a wee little man. He was small in stature, but he was a mighty man, a wealthy man. And when Jesus got below him, the prevenient grace of God was at work. Now, that's a traditional Methodist doctrine of the graces of God. And that's the kind of grace that goes before. And it's the kind of nudging that you get in your life, nudging you in certain directions. And I can remember growing up in the Free Methodist Church, I got converted probably 100 times every time they had a revival, but I didn't really understand what all that was going on. And then after we were married, I was drugged to the altar one time and embarrassed. And later I went to another revival. And that night, nobody bothered me. And I had white knuckles hanging onto the pew in front of me. But finally, something had been working on me, because as a teenager, I felt the call to the ministry, and I fought it and went the opposite direction. I did everything that you wouldn't do if you were going into the ministry. I got out of a lot of high school classes of English and literature and math, because I took the vocational courses, never knowing that God would use those in some way after I got into the ministry. But here's Zacchaeus. Jesus stops right below him, already knew all about him, and calls him by name and says, come down. because I'm going to your home for supper, dinner, whatever you want to call it. And so he goes to his home. Zacchaeus is so thrilled to be able to spend some time to ask some questions and find out more about this man. Why? Because he was experiencing the Spirit of Christ. Once you have experienced the Spirit of Christ, you're never the same. In fact, you're never the same regardless of what you experience every day. Every encounter you have with other people makes you a little bit different. And Zacchaeus was so impressed, and he heard some rumors about why is Jesus with this sinner of all people. But you know, as the New Testament has come to us through the inspiration of men and women and through the Apostle Paul, it says that we're all sinners. And I should have started this service out today by saying, my name is Louis Frick, and I'm a sinner. Because the truth is, here we are gathered together, a whole group of sinners. And any of you who don't claim to be, you need to read your New Testament. Because Jesus and God say that we're all sinners. We've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Now, through the Spirit of Christ, I've asked forgiveness, but I've still gone on and sinned. The old doctrine of sanctification didn't work on me that said if you're truly sanctified, the Holy Spirit will come in and rip out all the roots of sin, and you'll never be able to sin again. But when I heard some of their illustrations about a description of who's sanctified and who's not, I realized I wasn't sanctified, and I wasn't sure I ever wanted to be. I didn't think I could live that kind of life. It wouldn't be any fun. And so I went on. But Zacchaeus stands up and says, Lord, if I've done any wrong or taken anything that I shouldn't have taken, I'll restore it fourfold. Now, some scholars try to say he was a crook, that he got rich over the taxes. But he didn't need to do that. He didn't like his job in the first place. It was forced on him, and he was troubled by it. And so this man publicly accepts Jesus Christ in front of everybody that day and dedicates his life to him. He had experienced the Spirit of Christ in his life. And once that happens, you're a different person. God had a lot of dealings with me, as I told you, because I didn't understand anything about the scriptures or theology. And the first thing I know, I'm serving two little churches. And so I'm parroting everything that the home preacher that I grew up with, Dr. Heber Burge, and others that I had heard at camp meetings, didn't understand it. When I finally understood it, realized I didn't believe it, and chucked it all, and began searching for a real explanation of all of it. And so, you've been nudged in your life in different directions, but some of those nudgings came from the Holy Spirit and nudged you into the direction of service. There's a church down in Montgomery, Alabama, that for many years was the leading, fastest growing United Methodist church in the country. And that pastor developed a program that you could not join the church until you identified your ministry. Everybody had to identify their ministry, or you couldn't join the church. And at first I thought that's a little strange, but I went down. In fact, I took my whole staff down for a week, and we attended a lot of classes with some of the leaders there. And I determined that fellow really knew what he was talking about. And have you been to any church where they put the leaders of the church, the pastor and the secretaries and everything, and then down at the bottom, ministers, all 550 members, because we're all called to be ministers, some to be pastors, some to be musicians and other things, but we're all called to serve. What has God called you to do? As we stand together and sing our closing song, Forth in Thy Name, if you've felt the nudging of God and would like to come forward, I'm going to ask that we sing just the first and the last verse, "Forth in Thy Name." But if you'd like to come forward and answer the feelings and the nudgings that you've had that you haven't answered, I would encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity and do that and find the freedom for your life that you desire so much. Let's stand together.